Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to My Shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here's one of my favourite pictures. I found it in the attic of a flat I used to live in London. And what it is a sort of a sepia sketch of a little Boy Scout, a little sort of camp little Boy Scout who's got his hand on his hip and one leg kind of at a jaunty, you know, slightly showgirl kind of angle. And he's looking over his shoulder, and over his shoulder, touching his shoulder, is Jesus. For some reason. I have no idea either. Here is one of my favourite cushions. I love a cushion. And here's a cushion with my friend Esther the Wonder Pig's face on it. If you don't know who Esther the Wonder Pig is, please find out immediately. And today, my guest is my old chum and mucker, the incredible, hilarious, gorgeous Jane Horrocks.
Positive and kept saying, no, I'll definitely see you Monday.
The show must go on.
This'll all be over by Monday. Flash in the pan pandemic.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome.
Jane Horrocks is a total legend in the worlds of theatre, film and television. She's known to millions as Bubble from Absolutely Fabulous, and we starred in the original London production of Cabaret at the Donmar Warehouse. And most recently, we appeared together at the Old Vic in London, right before the pandemic. In fact, the pandemic cut the run short of Samuel Beckett's Endgame. But we first worked together and met in 1993 in the movie Second Best, directed by Chris Menges, which we shot in Wales. The thing I'm looking at from my shelves today is a Polaroid picture that was taken on the set of the movie Second Best. It's got a picture of Jane in her big curly blonde wig and me sitting at a table. And underneath it, Jane Horrocks has written on it, "Shut up, you stupid little blind date actor." You'll find out why. Had we met before we did Second Best?
I don't think we had, you know.
I don't think we had either. I think that must be when we met. So that was 1992.
93.
So that, was it 93?
Yeah.
Oh, at the beginning of the year. Oh, yes, I see. It was 93. So yeah. That means we're... So that was 93, 2003, 2013, 28 years ago.
I've known you for 28 years.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? I just think that's like...
Hilarious.
It's just things like that are just are hilarious. And just like, you know, that thing, I'm always marveling when I see, you know, like someone who I'm chatting to with you came out of your vagina. Things, you know, things like that. And also when you can say like 28, we've known each other for the length of an entire person's life.
Yeah.
A whole life. And it is a whole lifetime ago, actually.
It is.
So I've got this Polaroid. I sent you a copy of it. It's just hilarious. And
I've forgotten. You sent it to me and I've forgotten about you, stupid blind date actor.
Well, what it was I had done a comic relief thing recently, prior to that. A comic relief, you know, part of the comic relief night. It was a pretend, a blind date thing with Mr. Bean. So there was Scylla was there, and it was a proper thing of blind date, but the contestants were Mr. Bean, another guy who was kind of like the sort of Lothario, hey girls, kind of, you know, smoothie. And it was me as like the cute, nice one. And Roddy from Edinburgh or something. And that's what you're referring to when you called me a stupid little blind date actor.
Did you win the date? I expect Mr. Bean won, didn't
he? Mr. Bean won.
Of course.
Yeah, he won. you know, you don't beat Mr. Bean at anything. But I just remember laughing like a drain with you. Well, I just remember laughing like a drain with you always, but that we were in, not really in Wales, but nearly Wales, Radnorshire, that's the name of the county.
Oh, was it Radnorshire?
I think it was.
Oh, right, okay. It was Herefordshire.
Was it Herefordshire? Oh, but like very West England, almost at the border with Wales.
Yes.
And a hilarious story. And you had this wig that, I mean, it's like it's Deirdre Barlow at her most glamorous, I would say. But
I think it's Charles II. Or a Cocker Spaniel. I love that wig.
Oh, I remember you loving that wig.
I went the full hog. Actually, the character was described as that, as looking like that in Second Best, which
in
was
the book,
film, wasn't it? Yeah, in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Written by David Cook, and yes. With the Timmy Mallet glasses, I went the whole hog.
The whole 80s British showbiz memorabilia.
Yes. William Hurt didn't stand a chance.
He did not. He did not know what hit him. And it's just the idea of seeing William Hurt in a little English village in his wellies, and it was so cute. Like I remember when he was trying to sort of, you know, because he had to have this relationship with the little boy, and trying to sort of befriend the little boy and being and kind of, you know, chat to him and get, you know, make him feel comfortable and da, da, da. And I remember he gave him a copy of Hamlet as a present. And I was like, oh, Bill, just no. Get him like a, you know, a video game thing or something. Mm. Don't get him Hamlet. And also then somebody else said, and it was one of those reduced price Hamlets, one of the kind of £1 Hamlets that Shakespeare that you get in the supermarket. Shakespeare for £1.
Oh, gosh. Yes, no, I remember the little boy really liking us because we were silly. Yeah. I remember us sat round a table with William Hurt, the four of us, and the lad just wanting to be really daft with us, but yes. Having to be sensible with William.
Yes,
because they
I
were
know.
Doing they were doing serious acting.
I know.
We may have should have been doing serious acting, but we just weren't.
So for those of you who don't know who Deirdre Barlow or Timmy Mallet are, I should just explain. Deirdre Barlow was a fictional character on the English TV soap opera Coronation Street, who had big glasses and curly hair, lots of it, and was much loved, indeed, like Jane Horrocks. Timmy Mallet was a kids' TV presenter in the 80s who had very loud shirts and glasses and bow ties and a giant pink foam mallet known as Mallet's Mallet. I just remember, like, I hardly said anything in that film. I was in these scenes with the little boy and saying things like, you know, you've got to be ready, saying things like that to him. But you chatted on. A lot yes. in that film.
Yeah, well, I was doing a cocky sort of Manchester one time.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Deirdre. Yeah. Did you go there for a long time? Were you in that? I can't remember where we stayed. Do you remember?
I think we were there for about the same time. I don't think we were there. I don't think you were there any less than me.
I don't know. I think I might have gone away and come back.
Right, okay. Remember. Well, I think I probably did as well. No, I don't think I stayed. I remember us being in the makeup truck. And did you come racing in saying somebody had been bitten on the bottom by a dog?
I don't remember. I remember somebody died. Do you remember? Was it? Remember the man who drove the makeup bus died? Do you not remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
So, I'll tell you about that in a minute. But tell me about the bum incident.
Well, it was. I think everybody was very serious in the makeup truck.
Because Bill was there, probably.
Yes, yeah, it was. Yes. It was a very stilted conversation because he didn't like saying good morning to people because that was just sort of trivial. And what does that mean? Good morning.
You think it was because he was like doing method, he was being in character or something?
I think so, perhaps so.
Yeah, I don't like that.
He was very heavy and sort of, if you asked him, you know, something simple, he'd go into a very deep answer, which none of us understood.
No. So I remember once he asked me a question about something, blah, blah, blah. And I went, oh, God knows. And he went, yes, he does, Alan. Yes, he does. And I was like, oh, Christ.
Anyway, so his makeup artist, as a result, didn't ask him any questions because she knew she'd get a monologue of something very deep. And so the makeup room had rather a stilted atmosphere. And yes. Then you came bounding in with your usual energy and told us that somebody had been bitten on the bum by a dog.
Hold the front page. I don't remember that at all. I wonder who it was.
I don't know. But it was just such a relief. Thank you, Alan. Thank you for cheering us up.
But then when the man died, the man who drove the makeup bus died, right? Mm. And we were in makeup, getting all dolled up, and they said to us, you know, just we're going to stop filming today in honor of this man, and so just when you leave the bus, just be aware that he's still outside. And I was like, what? And so we walked outside the makeup bus and there was like a dead man on the floor with his feet sticking out of it. He had a blanket over him, but he had his feet sticking out.
Really? And that was him? Yes.
Yes, the man who drove the makeup bus. He died. And maybe you weren't there that day.
I don't think I saw him. I didn't see him.
Maybe you weren't working that day.
No, I wouldn't.
But I remember the lady who was working, one of the people who was working, was Doris Hare. And she was an old grand actress.
Yeah, didn't she work in the post office?
She worked in the post office, that's right. And she was famous for being in On the Buses, a sitcom about Reg Varney was a bus driver and she was his mum.
Yeah.
And she would always say things like, oh, Olive, things like that. And she, I'm looking her up on IMDb right now, and guess what? Second best is her last credit.
Oh gosh. Yeah, really?
Yes. But anyway, and she was quite old and quite doddery, as this story I'm about to tell you will attest. So she, we went that night, we sort of all went home, you know, the man died and filming was stopped. And Dixie, who's our friend who was one of the producers, said, let's all go for a dinner. So we went for this dinner. And Doris came out, and it was so fascinating because she was, you know, for me, it was like she was, I remember when I was a little boy being on the buses. So I was very excited. And we were talking about how crazy it was that this man had died. And she goes, well, you know, I was in makeup and someone came in and said, someone's died. And I thought, is it me? And I imagine being in the state where you would think you might possibly have died and not noticed.
How funny.
I remember that night as well that Dixie were trying to make small talk with Doris and we're having, you know, drinks and everything. And Dixie had seen, we'd got her in this film because she'd been in a Brian Ricks farce in London, you know, and she was like, she'd done that recently. She was talking about it. And Dixie is trying to be polite and chat to her, and she goes, "And have you done a lot of theatre, Doris?" And Doris did literally, you know, clasped her pearls and sort of looked at Dixie aghast, and she went, "I'm a West End actress," like that, which I think is a line we should bring back into.
We are West End actors.
We were before the pandemic. Before we were cruelly. So that was crazy, wasn't it? Like, did you know on the last, because it was a funny thing doing Endgame, because you know, you were in your dustbin and we with Carl, and you came from under the stage, so we never actually kind of crossed paths. We crossed paths in the wig room. That was even though we were on stage in a scene together, we never kind of engaged because you came at it from a different level.
Yes, I didn't really look round at you. That's because I was just focused on Carl. And yes, my character was...
You never turned your back on the audience. Yes.
But never cheat on the audience, darling, by turning your head.
Never. Give them it all, 100%. But the play was sort of, you know, taken off a few weeks before the end of our run. But like, and it was the end of a week. It was a Saturday night. And did, because I remember when Dan and I came off, he said to me, well, if that's the last night, that was a really good show to end with, right? And... Yeah. So I realised now, looking back at it, we kind of knew, because I think they'd stopped the flights. They'd set that the American flights were going to end on the Monday night or something. And we were wondering if they're going to, you know. But, so did you know that it was going to end, or did you have an inkling?
No, I didn't.
You just got a call on the Sunday?
Kind of sort of an inkling, because people kept saying to me, oh, well, we might not see you on Monday. This might be it. And I'm quite positive and kept saying, no, I'll definitely see you Monday.
The show must go on.
This will all be over by Monday. Flash in the pan pandemic.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Elroy Spoonface Powell, Spoon the Voice Guy. And I just want to tell you about a new podcast called Death of a Film Star. It's from the makers of Death of a Rock Star, and it's really good. We've got episodes about Heath Ledger, Chadwick Boseman, Marilyn Monroe, and Robin Williams. You've seen them tell incredible stories, so now it's time for us to tell theirs. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. Honestly, do it now. It'll be worth it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It was a funny thing. It's a funny thing to have something stop and you don't get to see Cheerio. And the one thing I did do before I left was I went back to the Old Vic. I got them to let me in to get my booze out of my dressing room.
Oh yes, you had so much.
I had all that vodka sponsored by that company. I'm not leaving this here. So I went off with my Arbiki vodka. That was probably why it was so heavy in all the 26 bags. It was clinking with bottles
yes,
of vodka.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yes, I know. I mean, it was so weird because I think that we were contemplating going nightclubbing that night.
Yes,
and then
we had a big night planned.
You said to me, maybe not this time if this virus is getting a bit out of hand.
Naaman, who is my dresser, said that the place we were going to go, he said, you know, it's really sweaty, it's really small, it's going to be full of, it's going to be full of flight attendants making out with each other who've flown everywhere and have got, you know, and I thought, oh my God, it's just like a petri dish. So we didn't go, but we did go to the box a couple of weeks before.
Yes, we did.
Do you remember that? I'm not sure how much. Because I remember we...
Oh, yes, I'm not sure how much you remember, Jane.
We'd all been drinking. But it was. Yes. I remember there was, you know, it was the box and there's one in London, there's one in New York and it's a racy club. And you hadn't been before and I was saying, oh, and we're talking about the show. We're waiting for the show, all night waiting for the show to come on because we knew there was going to be really saucy, racy acts.
Sordid.
Extremely sordid. And so something happened on this. We were watching. I was sitting next to you in the booth and Danny's and a couple of other people. And there was something that happened where a gentleman sat on an item that was huge. And there was penetration of with a blunt object that was like awe-inspiring, gobsmacking. We both gasped and both sort of like leapt backwards in the banquette. We were so shocked by this thing. The next day, you didn't remember it at all.
I still can't remember it, Alan.
You probably blanked it.
I still can't remember it. And people said it was massive. It was as big as the shard, apparently.
it was like a shard. But it's so funny that I do that. Grant always ribs me about the fact we'll be out having fun, but and someone he'll say the next day, do you remember talking to blah blah? I was like, no, did I see blah blah? Because you had like 20-minute conversation with them. And, you know,
it's terrible, isn't it?
It's the worst. I always say, oh, but I'm just so in the moment that I'm really in the moment and present, and then I let it go.
Yes, obviously.
AKA drunk. Yeah.
I know that was such fun though. It was
such
fun.
A good night.
And we went to other clubs as well. GAYE. in London.
I think it's just GAY, isn't it?
Yeah, GAY. Let's put an E on for good measure. Gay.
Maybe we went to GAY and did an E. Maybe that's what it was. I love a dance. And that's what I love about you, Jane Horrocks. You love to dance. And it's so funny. Like when we first worked together, because we did Second Best at the beginning of 1993. And then later that year, of course, we did Cabaret together at the Dorma.
Yes, Warehouse. It was later that year. You're right.
Yeah, same year. Yeah. And I knew that you were going to do it. You told me you were going to do it. And then shortly after that film, Sam asked me to do it too. But I wasn't really a dancer. No, I mean, I was sort of married and in a sort of, you know, it just wasn't. But it's actually funny. I think as I've gone on older in my life, I've got more, I dance more and I do more of the things that you're kind of supposed to do in your youth. Are you like that?
Yes, and I love dancing because I'm part of a group called Five Rhythms. Do you know of them? They're in New York as well. Well, they're everywhere.
Yes, it's a sort of you get together on a Sunday and you just dance.
Well, I get together on a Friday.
Oh, do you? Yeah. Oh, you know, there's one here. I'm thinking of one called Dance Church, and I think it's a similar thing where...
Yeah, sweat your prayers.
Yes, that's right. And someone leads it and you just dance.
And you just dance your own dance to these five rhythms.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, they play music that represents the five rhythms. And it's so good and it's given me so much more confidence now about dancing. So I'll just dance anywhere. I love it. Absolutely
me
love
too.
It.
Me too, yeah.
It makes me feel so good. I think it's such a brilliant thing for anybody to do. But as you get older, I don't think you should stop dancing. I think you should do more.
Totally. I love the thing of just dancing. You know, if you're somewhere like, I don't know, like in an airport or in a hotel lobby and a great tune comes on, I just dance.
Yeah.
And I think I actually think what one of the things you told me about that dance rhythm is that it's very, you know, there's so many different types of people and ages and body types and everything. And so it makes everyone feel that they're not being judged in that way that we normally associate with, you know,
that's
some
the thing
of those places
as well.
Where you can go to.
But I think because, you know, sort of we used to go to clubs, you know, sort of when we were teenagers and then maybe in our 20s a little bit. And then we're kind of conditioned to stop then. And, and like, well, grow up. You can't dance now. So just grow up. And you think, no, that's ridiculous that people feel that they can't dance because it's immature to dance.
I know. It's so silly. And I love when you see my favourite thing. It's one of the things I sort of think I do in my life is I encourage people to let go and in various ways. But I love, like, you know, if I'm DJing or having a party or something and I see people thinking, oh, I'd love to dance, but I'm a little nervous. Or people going to judge me? Are they going to sort of think I'm weird? And then you just see them half an hour later sweating and just having it's the best thing to sort of feel you've released something in someone. And it's such a great feeling.
And I think that the Five Rhythms is all about shaking, you know. So if you've got something going on that maybe isn't that great, then you just shake it all out.
Yes.
And actually just moving some energy, some sort of stagnant energy is really, you know, physically is a really great thing because then you just shift something.
Yeah.
And then you can see things a bit clearer, I think.
Absolutely. And then, you know, it was funny, I was watching a thing last night about the rave scene in the 80s and about how that sort of changed because of ecstasy being a drug where it made everyone come together and be kind and happy and, you know, more loving and everything.
Yeah.
And it actually really changed a sort of it changed society in a way because it would come out of Thatcher where it was all one man, every man for himself. And suddenly people were gathering together in these huge groups, taking drugs that didn't make them angry or it made them actually very loving and kind and respectful of each other. And I think that's a really an interesting thing that had a much bigger reverberation into the rest of society.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because it wasn't about alcohol, which invariably makes people aggressive.
Yeah.
Well, not always, but it can make some people aggressive.
Can do.
So,
yeah.
And by the end of the night, certainly, you know, there used to be fights, which were alcohol induced.
Yeah.
And with ecstasy, like you say, everybody wants to love each other and fall in love.
Fall in love. Mm. What's not to like? I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the rather galling yet hilarious situation between the two times we worked. In 1993, you played Sally Bowles. You were my sexy co-star in Cabaret. And then all those years later in Endgame at the Old Vic, you were my mum in a dustbin.
Yes.
How do you feel about that, Jane Horrock?
Yes. Tragic.
So in 1993, when we did Cabaret, it's so interesting. When I did it in New York a few years later, I got so much sort of like, oh, you know, everyone was talking about, did I try and do it differently from Joel Grey? Loads of stuff about Joel Grey. And, you know, it was funny because when we did it in London, I didn't think about that at all. I didn't, because I guess, you know, Joel was known for doing it on the theatre as well in New York and everything. But I wondered how it was for you playing Sally Bowles, which is such an iconic role. And did you feel sort of the weight of people's expectations or pressure in some way?
What, because of Liza Minnelli?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I mean, it is an iconic film, isn't it, Cabaret? So yes. I suppose... I mean, I think the thing that I felt, because in the book, I'm a Camera, you know, it describes Sally Bowles as being such a rotten singer and a rotten performer.
Yes.
I thought, well, actually, if you're going to bring any truth to this on stage, then, you know, present what is in the book.
Yeah, because, I mean, if she was such a big star, she wouldn't be in that little skeezy club.
Exactly. Of course you wouldn't. It was nice. And we both probably got to work with John Kander on the music, because, you know, that we were so fortunate that he came over and worked with us for a few days.
Yeah.
And I remember practicing Cabaret with him, and he said, you can either sing this as a celebratory song or a purge. He said, and I suggest you sing it as a purge. And he played the piano and he hammered the keys. It was like Sid Vicious playing the piano.
Wow.
It was like sort of so angry how he just belted the keys. And I thought, that's it. I mean, it sent shivers down me. I thought, I've got to do it like this. It's got to be the Sid Vicious or the Johnny Rotten version of the song as a purge. And
wow. It was amazing. I remember that. Like, I remember your hair was sort of wet and plastered down, and you were you're pale, and it was like you were screaming, and your face is kind of contorted on that last note, and your arms were really sort of, you know, taut and tight, and like you were flexing them tight to your body. It was a really incredible moment in the theatre.
Yeah, but I think, well, you know, your performance was an incredible performance.
No, you.
I mean, I think it was one of those, you know, kind of magic moments in the theatre where everything comes together and everything gels, doesn't it? And of course, we're working in the Dalmore, and they transferred it into a little club, where tables and chairs.
Do you know that Punch Drunk Theatre? Is that the ones that do the immersive things?
I love Punch Drunk.
Sleep No More and those other. It's all like you go into like an experience.
Yes.
So in New York, there's one, it's obviously off right now, called Sleep No More, that's about sort of based on Macbeth and also a Hitchcock film kind of fused. Obsessed with it. Yeah, it's so good. And it's in this big, huge sort of warehouse that used to be a massive dance club called Twilo, actually. And so there's various floors and different rooms, and you're in a street at one point you walk down. So great. And I was obsessed with it. And I actually got to know some of the people in it. And then they said, would you like to be in it? Would you like to do...
Oh, really?
There's a bit, you know, you can do these one-on-one things. You play a character, and because the characters wander around.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And there's ones where you actually do a one-on-one where you take someone, a member of the audience, who are all wearing masks. They're all wearing masks. And you take one into a room and you do a little thing with them. And I had to...
Ooh.
Yeah, so I did this thing where I played a doctor. I took a person into the room, locked
take
the door.
Take down your panties.
it was honestly a little pervy. And I put them into a bed and I tucked them in like a mummy. They couldn't move. Yeah, tucked them in. And music, you put music on, it's playing. And it's this interesting thing, which is sort of a lot about what the spirit of Cabaret was, which is this sort of combination of sensuality and fear all at the same time, like, ooh, and like that, and like I had to go into the person. They're like a mummy in this bed. They can't move, right? And I'm sitting on the side of the bed, and I started to go in towards them. Like, and when the first time when I saw it, a boy did this to me, and I thought he was going to kiss me. I thought, oh my god, I'm going to make out with this hot boy. Fantastic. Ooh. And I so, but that's what they do. And at the last moment, they pull away, and something else happens. So it's this kind of, you know, you have to sort of think, okay, I'm going. So I did that to people, to strangers. I would like go into them. I could see them thinking, holy shit, I'm going to make out with Alan Cumming. And then at the last moment, I leant over them and flicked a switch, and a light came on along the wall. And yeah, written on it on the wall was "The Raven himself is hoarse." You know, the line from Macbeth.
Oh yes, and, yes.
And then I started to like sort of, you know, make vomiting sort of movements. And inside my mouth, I had a little nail, a little kind of nail that you would bang into the wall. And I sort of coughed up this nail into my hand, and then hugged them, and then put them outside again. It was mental.
Oh, so I did that. Fantastic.
It was so great. I loved it, Jane. And of course, you just kept doing it to different people all night. Anyway, I did it two times, and the second time I met the boy, Felix, his name is, who's the person who invented Punch Drunk Theatre. And he said to me, gosh, you doing this tonight, Alan, it's kind of like everything coming full circle. I was like, what do you mean? And he said that when he was a little boy, when he's in his teens, he was brought to see cabaret at the Dormar Warehouse and sat at a little cabaret table with a little light on it. And, you know, and he said that was kind of the start of him thinking about immersive theatre.
Oh, really? How amazing.
In a way, yeah. So in a way, actually, it was sort of groundbreaking in those ways, because it was immersive. It was, you are, yes, supposed to believe you're in the club. You were kind of, to all intents and purposes, in this club. And also the other thing I think is interesting about it was that it did the thing which hadn't been done before, where there wasn't a band. The actors played instruments.
Yes.
And they were the orchestra. And that was a whole new thing. And now that happens all the time.
Yeah, of course, that's right. And there were the dancers as well.
Yes, the dancers played too. Yeah, they had to, yeah, do all these.
Yeah, they did everything.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's kind of, it's so funny to think that you were a part of something that sort of changed things, when at the, yes, time it just felt like a natural thing to do.
I know. It was an iconic show. I'm very, yeah, much ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Directed by Sam Mendes.
Sam Mendes, yes, indeedy. Lovely Sam. Jane Horrocks, it's been so nice to talk to you and to go on this little walk down memory lane, and I will forever be your stupid little blind date actor.
I wish you'd won. If you'd won, your career might have gone in a different direction.
if I'd beaten Mr. Bean. Do you know, yeah, when we did Blind Date, so Cilla was there, and like, so Blind Date was this real show, and there, so it was like the music, and you came out, and you know, and then she kind of did a little kick at the end.
Hello, everyone.
That's right.
Here's number one. What's your name? Where'd you come from?
Exactly that. So that was what. And the thing was, we were shooting it, and Cilla was taking a while, and she'd had a few glasses of champagne. Everyone, we were told, and I could sort of smell champagne. That sort of funny strawberry, sort of bubbly, sparkly smell of champagne. I could smell it on her breath. She was a little pissed, and. And I was so kind of nervous, and we were kept waiting, you know, and Rowan was very nervous. He was really kind of, you know, agitated about it all. And I was number one. And so she said, so number one, hello. And I went, hello, hello, Cilla, I'm blah, blah. And she went, stop, stop, stop. Normally I say, what's your name and where do you come from? I mean, if you want to change it, that's fine. If you want to change it, but this is the way we normally do it. If you're trying to pretend this is the real show, then we've got. And so I incurred the wrath of Cilla.
Oh, you were a bit, she was a bit miffed. Did her eyes go very narrow?
Well, they were, it was so bloodshot, I couldn't see. No, but she got a bit minty with me, and I was like, no, Cilla, no, absolutely, whatever way you do it, let's try and do it. And, but yeah, no, I'll never forget that. I incurred the wrath of Cilla.
Oh, gosh.
I've incurred the wrath
if you write another memoir, that's what it should be called.
The Wrath of Cilla.
I incurred the really wrath of idea. Cilla.
Anyway, I love you, Jane Horrocks. It's so good to talk to you. And I hope maybe we'll get to do Endgame again finish off a run somewhere.
I'd love to do that. I mean, it was briefly, wasn't it poignant though? The content.
My God, post-plague sort of life. Yes,
exactly,
absolutely.
Exactly.
I think it would be great to do it again. I talked to Richard recently. He was saying about doing it in New York and about how great would it be once everything gets back up and going, doing a play about, you know,
about a pandemic.
Yeah. I think it could be really good. So we'll see. But I love you and thank you so much for being on Alan Cumming's shelves today, Jane Horrocks.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
So now it's time to put Jane's Polaroid back on my shelves. I hope you had a good time listening to us and hope you'll join me next time for another trip down memory lane. Take care. Alan Cumming's Shelves is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, and produced by the lovely Jack Claremont. We are part of the Acast Creator Network and the Crowd Network too. We just love networks. Another Crowd Network podcast to check out is The Joe Marler Show. Joe is an England rugby player, but here's the catch. His guests are normal people doing normal jobs. He's meeting teachers, chefs, stunt women, tattoo artists, marine biologists, astronauts, and soldiers. And he's asking all the questions you or I would ask. It's as simple as that, but it's also charming because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions. Just search for The Joe Marler Show in your podcast app.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.